Welcome to the Clubhouse Corner with Benny, Moose, and Eddie. Straight from Fremont's The Clubhouse. Dive into a world where East Coast golf elegance meets West Coast chill. Well, Eddie, here we are again, episode 13.
13, unlucky for some, right? 13.
You know, lucky for most, though.
Yeah, I feel lucky today, though.
I do, too. Yep. It's a good one. You know, it's been a great season. This is our final episode of season number one of The Clubhouse Corner.
Yep.
It's been a lot of fun. We've had some really good guests.
Great ride, great conversations, great guests. We've got another great guest today.
We do. I can't wait to introduce him.
Awesome.
Again, thank you to our sponsors, Trumer Pills.
Yep.
The perfect Pilsner.
Yeah, the most awarded Pilsner.
In the world.
Good stuff. Berkeley Tap Room. Go check it out.
Go check it out. It's pretty special up there. And thank you to Mike Peters and Bear Companies. You know, Without those two, the show probably wouldn't have been possible. So thank you, guys. It's been an amazing season. We look forward to hopefully doing it again.
Season number two.
Season two coming up. A couple other people I want to thank as well. Here at Four Finger Studio, Deegan and Josh, the producers. Obviously at KNBR, Murph and Marcus for really pumping up the Clubhouse Corner podcast and the show on Saturday mornings and leading up to the shows as well. And then Paul Frere, he's the one that made this whole thing happen. It wouldn't have been possible, really, without Paul suggesting, asking, hey, Benny, do you want to go and do a radio show?
Yeah, this has been a fun ride.
It has.
It really is. It's a professional operation here. Deegan and Josh do a great job turning tragic into magic, with especially the two of us, Benny Moose.
Well, it is sometimes more tragic, but then it always turns into magic.
That's right.
It turns into magic. So you mentioned we have a great guest. So, you know, a friend of ours, and an accomplished local golfer, a co-member at La Rinconada with myself, I'd like to introduce Bob Maroyan. Thank you, Bob, for being here.
Hey, thank you, Benny. Nice to see you, Eddie.
Welcome. It's great to see you too,
good
Bob.
Good to be back with all you guys.
Absolutely. It's been way too long.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
You know, I've played a few rounds of golf with you, Bob, and I'm always enamored at the fact of, you know, your consistency and your play and, you know, your ball striking and your focus. And we'll talk a lot about that today, if you don't mind.
Sure, whatever you wish.
All right. When I say accomplished, you know, it's competition golf is tough. You know, a lot of people don't have that ability to kind of turn it on and keep it on when it's time to, you know, tee it up. And I think if my memory is correct, you have 6 championships?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Half a dozen.
Number 7 coming up next year, right, Bob?
I hope
you'll be
so.
Back in action?
I hope so. We'll see. Takes a lot of practice, a lot of effort,
and a little bit of
luck along the way, too.
So you've been out of the golf for the last couple of years, Bob, right? Had a couple of shoulder surgeries?
Yes. I'm 65 years old now, almost 66.
And you'll be shooting your age pretty soon then.
if I stop on the 14th hole, maybe.
The 14th.
But I fell down jogging a few years ago and that allowed me to have one shoulder operation.
That was your left or your right?
That was my right shoulder.
I had a
reverse shoulder surgery where they put new artificial parts in my shoulder and reversed the ball in the socket. And then I was recovering about 10 or so months after that and... somehow my left shoulder gave out, which is another story, and it required another operation.
Wow.
So I went around the calendar twice for about 2.5 years doing the same damn things in physical therapy. And finally it came around, and now it's about 80% there.
Right.
But still I do my physical therapy, and I've still got a ways to go.
What's 80%, your shoulder or the golf game?
My shoulder.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I was going to say your golf game is pretty spot on.
Well, but without shoulders, it's pretty hard to play golf.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It really is.
I would say so. So, you know, going back to the let me back up one quick second. Do you think the left shoulder was what they call a red herring? Where, like, what do you think happened there?
You know, I don't know. It was really interesting because when you recover from one shoulder operation, you're always working on the other shoulder. And so as I was working through these exercises for 10 months, I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching my right shoulder and I'm trying to get that shoulder well, while at the same time, my left shoulder was doing all the same exercises. So I thought to myself, my left shoulder is going to be
strong, yeah.
Right? It's going to be a hell of a shoulder.
But it gave out.
And then all of a sudden, one day, it just gave out, and it was serious enough where I recognized that I felt the same things I was feeling on the prior shoulder.
Wow.
And the way all these surgeons work is they say, let's get an MRI. So right. You go for the MRI. The MRI came back torn again. Wow. Back into surgery.
So frustrating.
It was really difficult.
So there's light at the end of the tunnel now. You got 20% to go, and you'll be back chipping and putting first?
Well, I'm playing now.
Okay,
and,
good.
And I can play okay, but it's different because my body parts just don't work
right.
the same.
Right.
And when things don't work the same, then it's really hard to be consistent.
For sure. Yep.
So it's work in progress.
Well, I think I speak for a lot of people. They're really happy to have you back on the course.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back. You know, we all love golf, and it's not just about the scores that we shoot, but it's about the camaraderie and the fellowship and the good times.
100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So just if you could pick one of your championships, going back to the beginning, which one stands out the most? Is it the first one? Is there one in between?
Yeah, it would probably be the last one, because at that time I was maybe 62, give or take.
Recently, I mean, 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 3 years ago, four mm-hmm. years ago, in 19, I think. But the reason why that one was a little more enjoyable was because I beat several young guys.
Yeah.
And it's always fun to beat somebody decades younger than you.
For sure.
You know, they bomb the ball. You know, they bomb the ball so much farther than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, I think, strategies and ways to beat people who hit the ball farther than you. And probably the easiest way is just get that ball on the green first.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep hitting greens in regulation, well, then they know, maybe they know, after they've hit it past you, that you will probably be on the green.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that little bit of pressure, I think, just kind of builds throughout a round. And maybe at some point in time, you can pass on a few seeds of doubt that might enter their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you might have a chance to win. And you know, there's so many things about golf. You know, people ask me, you know, why do you like golf? And the answers that I've always kind of come up with is I really enjoy constructing a golf swing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does. That's why we practice, because you want to construct a golf swing that will work under pressure in ideally tournament situations. But then there's the variety of playing different courses. Obviously, hitting the ball is a lot of fun. Short game requires more work. But the management of the game and the preparation for certain events is what brings me the most joy, because I find that preparation tends to pay off.
Mm-hmm. Hard work pays off.
Yeah. And I just love the strategy of it. You know, it's not just a game where you hit a ball and try to make putts, but there's, I think, a lot more to it than that. And what I've really enjoyed doing and trying to learn about those things is reading various psychology books on golf, or even listening to the great players of the past and hearing what they have to say.
Do you have a favorite golf psychologist by any chance?
Well, I think the one that I've enjoyed the most is Bob Rotella.
Yeah,
right?
He's like the grandfather of it. Yeah.
I mean, I also feel that, you know, golf is a like many things,
mm-hmm.
it's very complex, very difficult, and it's really fun to bump into people who simplify things.
Right.
And Bob Rotella simplifies the management aspect of the game.
Right. Barbertel has been a big topic of conversation on a few of our episodes. Mm-hmm. So listeners out there, you know, check it out. He's got, I don't know, what, 15 books?
He's got probably about 30 books.
30 books.
Yeah, I think the most famous one is Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. Uh-huh. I just loaned out one of the books, The 15th Club. Uh-huh. He's got a lot of books. And small little reads, too, but very simple. Mm-hmm. One of our favorite Ackermans is Kiss, Keep It Simple, Stupid. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he does a really good job of clearing out all the junk that's in your head and kind of focusing on what you're supposed to focus on.
And he's good to go back and review as well. You know, you don't just put it on the shelf and forget about it. You know, I go back and read little snippets that I need to remember and mm-hmm. remind myself of sometimes as well. You know, Bob, you mentioned you like the preparation side of golf, whether it be, you know, recreation, but more importantly, competition. And, you know, I remember when you were laid up on your second shoulder, we had a conversation at the club, and I said, you know, you're probably meditating your way to recovery, and you've envisioned this golf course 1,000 times or more, and you're going to come back stronger than ever. And I think you kind of accomplished that. So what do you do to mentally prepare?
Well, that's a great question. I think you got to keep it simple. But I think there's certain doors you have to go through. I think the way most people do it is they simply practice their golf game. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly a good one. But when you do practice, I think you should practice more short game than and putting rather than just hitting balls.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one thing. The second thing is I like to prepare physically. By that I mean by doing golf exercises, by staying in shape, keeping your back strong, injury prevention type stuff. And then the third part is the mental part. I try to derive plans on how to play certain courses based on course characteristics. I concentrate on, you know, many of these course management strategies that help when rounds start going sideways, because you can almost expect the round to go sideways many times in a round.
Yeah, that's a good point. You need
to
go to
be prepared for that.
Jack Nicklaus always talked about he has a go-to shot when it goes sideways. My personally is a punch shot. I can always rely on that punch shot. If I'm not comfortable, I'm nervous, I can always pull that shot off. Doesn't have to be pretty. It just needs to be functional. Absolutely, it's
right,
a great
just
point.
Make it effective. But so for me, Benny, it's about practicing. It's about preparing your body, and then it's about preparing your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've said 100 times on the show over the last few weeks that, you know, golf is probably the most difficult game to play. You know, it's the ball's just sitting there. It's not a 90-mile-an-hour fastball coming at you or a cutter that's breaking 2.5 feet across the plate. It's just sitting there. It should be easy. Well, I mean, what? But you go through your steps of preparation. You kind of keep it simple, stupid,
mm-hmm.
and go back to your basics. But I think in the competition world, I think that's probably the most mentally challenging for me is to... But I love competition. I hate losing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stand it. But it's definitely a preparatory, you know, factor to be able to be ready to do that against the best golfers. And then, to your point, to compete with a consistent, but in your own mindset, you know, and not be distracted or intimidated by the long bombers or whatever it may be.
Exactly. I've always thought that the swings are all the same, but only the minds are different. And the best minds win in general. And that's true in every sport, though, right? I mean, you know, like, for instance, in golf, everybody wants to design for themselves a beautiful golf swing like Adam Scott that just works super, or a Tiger Woods or whomever else, Tom Weisskopf. But I think... in a competition, sometimes the people who play the best are the people who have goofy golf swings with really good timing.
Mm-hmm.
They know themselves. They know their strengths. They know their weaknesses. They know their tendencies and parameters. And they always play within themselves. And that goofy golf swing that you saw on the first hole may shoot a heck of a score that day.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need a pretty golf swing.
You just need a functional golf swing
that you can rely on.
And that you know, and that's repeatable.
That's right. You know, the word that gets lost in so many rounds of golf or on the range is just the word consistency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have the goofiest golf swing in the world, and we all know people who do, professionals, but if that swing is consistent, you don't want to play that guy.
Right, repeatable.
Or that lady or whomever.
At the clubhouse, we have the SAM Putt Lab, which is the world's leading putting analytical tool, and it measures what you do when you putt, but also measures your consistency. And they define your overall score in it as the consistency is 50% of their overall score. And they say that a consistency of repeatability is almost as important as what you're actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely, yeah, good point.
You had mentioned that he... you know, you referenced Jack Nicklaus a few minutes ago. And rumor has it, our guest here, Bobby, has a pretty good Jack Nicklaus story that he's willing to share.
Bobby shared this story with me probably about 5 years ago. Fascinating story about Jack Nicklaus' golf equipment. Do you mind sharing the story with us and the viewers?
Sure. I'll give it a try. This story began with, let's say, my love for muscleback irons, especially the McGregor Silver Scott irons that were built in the 70s. So about 10 years ago, I saw an ad and a photo in a golf magazine for muscleback irons. And so one late afternoon, as I was leaving work, I decided to try to call this 800 number. So I did, and I didn't even know where I was calling. And I ended up calling Florida, where a fellow by the name of Tony Pando answered the phone. And we spoke for a while. And finally, I asked him, I said, you know, Mr. Pando, who am I calling and who do you work for?
Right.
And he said, I work for Jack Nicklaus. So I thought to myself, well, that's really something. And so I asked him about the irons in this one particular ad, and he said that those irons were the last custom set of irons ever made for Nicklaus. And I then asked him, well, are any for sale? Are any still available? And he said, there might just be two or three sets left, but otherwise they're all gone. Mr. Nicklaus passed them out to his friends. So... I asked if he could just check his inventory, and he got back to me a week or two later, and he said, I found a set. And so I said, well, isn't that something? How might I look at them if you would be interested in selling them to me? And he said, well, I'm not interested in shipping any of these, but I'll send you just the 3-iron. I don't want you to hit it at all, but if you like it, I'll sell you the set, and we'll go from there. So the 3-iron came in a nice box a few weeks later, and I looked at it, and immediately I said to myself, this is a hell of a set of irons. So so I asked him if he would sell me the set, and he said he would. So I was thrilled. They arrived a few weeks later. I used them for about 5 years, and they were just beautiful to play with. And they were just like the old McGregor Silver Scots, except even better. And I was told that they came with Nicklaus's favorite characteristics, which were a thin top line, a rounded toe, and diamonds on each end of the score lines on the club itself. And I had seen these before in the 70s when all the greats were using McGregor equipment. So I stayed in touch with Tony over a few years, and he, over our conversations, he told me that he was from Castro Valley right here in the Bay Area. So one day he said he was coming out to see his family and he wanted to catch a 49er game, but he didn't know how to get tickets. So I got him tickets to the game, and we met at a local coffee shop, and we talked all about, you know, golf equipment, especially, McGregor equipment. And and then I asked him in the coffee shop, I said, you know, who made these irons for Jack Nicklaus? And he said, it was Mr. Clay Long. Clay made all of Nicklaus's equipment, and he is the master clubmaker like no other. So a few weeks went by, and I checked in with Tony to see how he liked the game. And then I asked him, I said, you know, would it be possible for me ever to meet Mr. Long? And he said, sure, I'll give him a call and make the introduction, and then you can call him and he'll expect your call. So I was thrilled. So I ended up calling Mr. Long myself. We spoke about historical muscleback irons and all the McGregor pros who used to use that equipment. And then I asked him if I could come down and visit with him one day and talk to him about possibly making a set of muscleback irons, because that was my goal, was to make a real high-grade set of muscleback irons.
Personal.
Uh-huh. Which I wanted to sell to others. And so he said, sure, come on down. So I did come down to Carlsbad, met with him. He was at that time hired by TaylorMade to make some wedges for TaylorMade. He was their consultant. And so we had a wonderful meeting. I went down with my son, Matt. We met for hours talking about how we could make this set. He was more than willing to do it. He said we had to leave the country to do it. It would probably cost about $300,000 for the first set. But he cautioned me about how slim that market is. He said not too many people would find value in a set like that. But he said if I wanted to give it a try, he would be willing to do so. Well, as it was, we never did it for all those reasons. Now, Clay Long also, one of his additional specialties is that he makes putters too. And he made the response putter that Nicklaus won the 1986 Masters with. Yeah. You know, that very large mm-hmm. 6-inch putter. Mm-hmm. Well, after Jack won that Masters in glorious fashion, all of a sudden the next day there were hundreds of orders for that putter. And in the next year they sold over 350,000 putters
wow.
of that type. And so that was really interesting. And Clay's website, by the way, is still up and running. It's called rollyourball.com. Hmm. Rollyourball.com.
That's a good website.
So anyway, after we spoke that day in his office, he then took me back to his industrial building where he was located, where there were grinders and lathes and wheels and all kinds of stuff in there. And we furthered our conversation, and then I saw on these shelves there were some brown boxes, and one said Arnold, the other said Greg on it, the other said John Mahaffey, Johnny Miller, Tom Weisskopf, and then there was one box that said Jack. So after I saw all these other players' irons that he had made, I said, can we open up the Jack box? And so in opening it up, all of a sudden there were a set of irons identical to the one that Tony had sold me 5 years before.
Wow.
And I said, I knew they were the same because they said JNP, which stood for Jack Nicklaus Personal. And I said, what set is this? And he said, this is set zero.
Wow.
This was the set that Jack approved so that more sets could be made for his benefit. So anyway, at the end of the day, we shook hands, and I had one of the greatest educational golfing days of my life, and I ended up flying home with a few sand wedges and putters. But before I left him, I said, you know, Clay, may I ask you something? And he said, sure. And I said, you know, if by chance, I don't mean to be too forward or anything, but if by chance you ever want to get rid of those, of that one set of irons, the first set of JNPs, would you call me first? And so he said, yeah, maybe. And so I didn't press it at all. But then a few months went by, several months, and he called my office one afternoon, and I was thinking, why is he calling me now? You know, and then he said, I want to talk to you about what you asked me. And I'm thinking, well, what did I ask
you? He forgot.
Okay, so anyway, he said, I've thought about it for a long time, and I'm ready to part with those irons now. And I said, oh, my gosh, the set zero of the JNPs. And he said, yep, I'd like for you to have them if you'd be interested. So then I asked him, well, how much would you sell them to me for? And he said, $750. But they're not shafted. So I said, send them up.
Sold.
Send them to San Jose. So, Benny, I bring to you that set of irons.
No kidding.
And here they are. I know the folks on the radio can't see them, but here they are. I have the two iron through sand wedge. And
wow,
and they are absolutely something. Look at that seven iron.
Wow, look at those. Those are sexy.
Isn't that a fascinating story, Ben?
Yeah, that is incredible.
Bob shared this story with me years ago in the pro shop at La Rinconada, and I was just blown away.
Absolutely.
And then he brought me in the clubs and showed it to me. Really cool.
I think that's the best set of irons I've ever seen.
From the greatest golfer that's ever played the game.
But it's a credit to Clay Long.
Wow, that is really cool, Bob.
Yeah. Really
this is
neat.
I'm holding like a piece of history
and,
here.
And so if you look at these also in the center, Mr. Long told me that Mr. Nicholas wanted to know exactly where every sweet spot was and the gram weight of every club.
Wow.
And so Clay marked them all up, and I haven't touched them, and here they are.
Wow, Bob. That is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Super special. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
And those are probably some of the best looking clubs I've ever seen. I mean, these diamonds, I didn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah, so there they are, the diamonds on the end of each score line.
I don't know if you can see this on the camera, but if you're watching the podcast, check this out. The diamonds along both sides here, the center spot right there. Wow, look how clean those are.
You've kept them in great shape too.
Oh yeah, well they're...
Wow, Bob, that's
protected
gross.
Inside the house.
You got those in a vault somewhere? Because those are...
Yeah, I mean, and people ask me, I share them with all my golfing friends, and they say, are you ever going to shaft them?
Yeah.
And I just don't know yet.
Right.
I just don't know yet.
I don't know that you should.
I don't know.
Wow.
I just don't know.
That is...
I feel very lucky to have them.
Yeah.
Well, we feel lucky for having heard the story. Thank you.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
My uncle used to be in the shoe business, and he made a pair of golf shoes for Jack Nicklaus at his house.
Fantastic.
And we were kind of running short on time, but I'll tell you that offline.
All right. Yeah. Wonderful.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Bob. And Bob, thank you, for being here. It really means a lot.
Well, thanks for inviting me, you guys. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Bobby.
For all of your, social, corporate, relaxing needs, be sure to check out the clubhouse up in Fremont. For all of your golfing needs, check out, reach out to Eddie at FremontClubhouse.com.
That's right.
All of your golf equipment needs, your lessons, private or group, corporate events, bocce ball, et cetera, full bar. 19th hole, just a chip shot away from the first tee.
That's right.
So, Eddie, again, this has been a lot of fun,
So it's a shame season one has come to an end, but I'm looking forward to season two, Benny Moose.
Yeah, me too. I hope it comes to fruition and, we can... we can keep this thing moving along. But anyway, Eddie, what do?
Turn tragic into magic.
One golfer at a time.
That's right.
Bobby, thanks again, everybody. Hit them straight, not often, and we'll see you on the fairway soon.
You betcha. Good to be with you guys.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Benny.